Gopi Jana Barba Iri Barna Ude Yasoda Nan Anna Vrata Jana Nanda Munda
Yasoda Nan Anna
Yasoda Nan Anna Vrata Jana Nanda Munda Yamuna Tera Panachalade Ramona Che Ravana Chaude Jai Hurada Madhva Huma Kunya Viva Hude Jai Hurada Madhva Kunya Viharuti Gopi Jana Bharavat Iri Bharavati Gopi Jana Bharavat Iri Varadhaguti Yasoda Nandana Vraja Jana Nandya Gunta Yasoda Nandana Vraja Jana Nandya Gunta Yamuna Te Ravana Chalde Yamuna Te Ravana Chalde Jai Ho Radha Madhu Vat Kunya Vihavati Jai Radha Madhu Vat Kunya Vihavati Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Paragatacharya Osta Tela Satishi Shimad His Divine Grace Avaya Chananana Bhaktivedanta Gosami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Anandakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Ram Se Kaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Gadadha Shiva Siddhi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Gijai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopata Sayam Kunda Radha Kunda Kiri Govardhan Gijai Vrindavanam Gijai Maturnam Gijai Navadeepdam Gijai Jagadathasami Gijai Yamunamai Kajai, Shrimati Lassi Devi Kajai, Samveda Bhakta Vrindi Kajai, Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bo. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So, we're reading from 5th Canto, Chapter 5, Text 23. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Na Brahmanais Tulaye Utam Anyat Pashami Vipraha Kim Ata Parang Tu Yasmin Rivihi Rahutang Shradayahum Ashnami Kamang Na Tithagni Hotre Na Brahmanash Tulaye Bhuttamanyat Pashami Viprakim Ataparam Tu Yasmin Rivi Prahutam Shradayam Ashnami Kamam Natatagni Hotre Na Brahmanais Tulaye Bhutamanyat Pashami Viprakim Ataparam Tu Yasmin Rivi Prahutam Shratiham Ashnami Kamam Natatagni Hotre Brahmanais Tulaye Bhutamanyat Pashami Viprakim Ataparam Tu Yasmin Rivi Prahutam Shratiyaham Ashnami Kamam Natatagni Hotre With the Brahmanas.
With the Brahmanas.
Tulaye.
Tulaye.
I count as equal.
Bhutam.
Bhutam.
Entity.
Anyat.
Other.
Pashami.
I can see.
Vipraha.
Oh,
assembled Brahmanas.
Kim.
Anything.
Anything.
Ataha. To the Brahmanas.
To the Brahmanas.
Param.
Superior.
To.
Certainly.
Yasmin.
Yasmin.
Through whom?
Through whom?
Ribbehi.
By people.
Prahutam.
Prahutam.
Food offered after ritualistic ceremonies are properly performed. Shadeha. With faith and love.
With faith and love.
Aham.
I.
Ashnami. Eat. Kamam. With full satisfaction. Na. Not. Tata.
In that way.
Agnihotri. In the fire sacrifice. The translation, O respectful Brahmanas. As far as I am concerned, no one is equal or superior to the Brahmanas in this world. I do not find anyone comparable to them. When people know my motive after performing rituals according to the Vedic principles, they offer food to me with faith and love through the mouth of a Brahmana. When food is thus offered unto me, I eat it with full satisfaction. Indeed, I derive more pleasure from food offered in that way than from the food offered in the sacrificial fire. You could repeat, O respectful Brahmanas.
O respectful Brahmanas.
As far as I am concerned, no one is equal or superior to the Brahmanas in this world. I do not find anyone comparable to them.
When people know my motive,
after performing rituals,
according to the Vedic principles,
they offer food to me with faith and love through the mouth of a Brahmana.
When
food is thus offered unto me,
I eat it with full satisfaction.
Indeed, I derive more pleasure
from food offered in that way
than from the food offered in the sacrificial fire. So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. According to the Vedic system, after the sacrificial ceremony, the Brahmanas are invited to eat the remnants of the offered food. When the Brahmanas eat the food, it is to be considered directly eaten by the Supreme Lord. Thus, no one can be compared to qualified Brahmanas. The perfection of evolution is to be situated on the Brahminical platform. Any civilization not based on Brahminical culture or guided by Brahmanas is certainly a condemned civilization. Presently, human civilization is based on sense gratification, and consequently, more and more people are becoming addicted to different types of things. No one respects Brahminical culture. Demoniac civilization is attached to Ugra karma. Horrible activities and big industries are created to satisfy unfathomable lusty desires. Consequently, the people are greatly harassed by governmental taxation. The people are irreligious and do not perform the sacrifices mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. Yadbhavati bhavati parajanyaha. By the performance of sacrifice, clouds form and rain falls. Due to sufficient rainfall, there is sufficient production of food. Guided by the Brahmanas, society should follow the principles of Bhagavad Gita. Then the people will become very happy. Anad bhavanti bhutani. When animals and men are sufficiently fed with grains, they become stronger, their hearts become tranquil, and their brains peaceful. They can then advance in spiritual life, life's ultimate destination. So, na brahmanais tulaye bhutamanyat, vashyami vipra kimataparam tu, yasmin ribi prahutam shrut. Dihaham, Vashnamikam Mamnatatagni, O Trey.
So Om Ganati Midandasha Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshuru Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
So what Srila Prabhupada is referring to, what the verse is referring to here, is not the caste Brahman. Caste Brahman basically means someone who is considered Brahman because his father and his family is a Brahminical family. And Prabhupada gave the example, which is an example that's very good for us to use, because when preaching to these ritualistic Brahmanas or someone who has the name Trivedi, Chaturvedi, Dwivedi, or any of these names like this, or Shah or Sharma, you can actually tell in India when one has a different caste. So when preaching to them and they are thinking we're Brahmins, you just use the example that Prabhupada gave about a medical doctor. It's a perfect example. He said, if your father is a doctor, that doesn't mean that you're a doctor, does it? I mean, do you have a right to operate on people just because your father is a doctor? I know little kids, sometimes they play doctor. But that's a different issue. No, you obviously don't have a right to operate. Not only don't you have a right, you probably kill someone if you operate on them, or if you do anything with them, or if you diagnose a disease. To become a doctor, you have to go through so much education. Not only education, there's jnana and vijnana, just like we talk about a Brahman. Jnana, vijnana, Brahma, karma, swabhavajam, the qualities of a Brahman. You have to go through medical school, take so many tests, and then you actually go through, you become an intern. And you have residency after that. There's some, you know, practical, it's called a practicum. You actually have to practice and you're observed by someone who is actually much more advanced in the doctor field. And this is one thing that you have, it's called a rotation, that you rotate through different types of practice at the hospital. Like one day you're in the emergency room, and a few days later you're in obstetrics, and a few days later you're in the burn unit, and a few days later you're in gynecology, and a few days later you're in some other division of the hospital. So it's training. And so that same thing with being a Brahmana. And of course Krishna does say that in the Gita. He says, Chaturvana Mayashrista, Guna Karma Vibhagasha, the one is known to be a Brahmana by his or her qualities and work. Two things, qualities and work. So therefore we find in our history, in Vaishnava history, that people who were born in non-Brahminical families are sometimes accepted as Brahmanas. And sometimes people who are born in Brahminical families are not accepted as Brahmanas. To give you an example of the first case, there's a story from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, that you have a Dvaitacharya who was certainly born in a Brahminical family. And one of the procedures that people do in the Vedic culture is they have this ceremonial shraddha. What it means is basically, shraddha of course means faith, but it means that one is offering foodstuffs, and sometimes it's to the demigods and sometimes it's to the forefathers, but it's in honor of someone who is departed. We were just doing some research about what to do if someone departs. And it's very interesting. For those who are devotees, it's not a big thing. You know, you don't have to worry about them becoming ghosts. You don't have to worry about so many things with devotees because they're chanting. But with those who are not devotees, it's such an elaborate ritual. I mean, I wrote on the internet, you know, please give me some information on what we should do if someone departs. And I got from our deity worship minister this like 100-page ritual of everything. You know, you have to get rid of the ghost, you have to do this, you have to do that. And I sent him a letter back. I said, give me something practical to do. You know, I'm not a ritualistic Brahmana, you know, that we'd be there for 3 years doing all these things. I mean, my eyes won't even last to read the paper you sent me, what to speak of performing all these different mantras. But the point is that, he also made the point, is that for a devotee, these rituals aren't even necessary. I mean, basically what you do when a devotee passes away, you put tilak on their body and chant Hare Krishna. And that's enough. And, you know, you can also put, like, Ganges water or Jamuna water or Radhakund water and then Tulsi leaf on the tongue. And, you know, that's it, you know, the chanting of Hare Krishna. Of course, you can also chant some of the verses from the Isopanishad, let this body be burned, and, you know, let me enter into the, you know, last verse of the Isopanishad. So, and Brahma Samhita and other things like that. But it's not such a strict thing with the Vaishnavas, because it's basically the chanting of Hare Krishna accomplishes everything. And even when I'm doing some things like my deity worship or whatever I'm doing, and there's so many different mantras, I just chant Hare Krishna usually. Because I can't, in my Kali Yuga brain, I can't remember all the different mantras I'm supposed to chant. You know, when I'm picking Tulsi, I just chant Hare Krishna. When I'm taking care of the deities, when I'm sleeping, I'm just chanting Hare Krishna. I'll give you a trick for chanting attentive japa. And this is actually very interesting, something I realized. Because many times we're chanting, like, you know, with our mouth, but not with our mind. And the whole point is Savai Manah Krishna Padara Vindayo. You know, to focus the mind on Krishna. And of course, the chanting is also wonderful, but the mind has to be focused on Krishna. So what I found is that if you chant around just with your mind silently, not that you count that as one of your rounds, because I know we're supposed to chant out loud. Like Prabhupada said, the lips and the tongue have to move when we chant Hare Krishna. But if you actually, and it's a real strain too to do it, if you just, like, keep your mouth closed and chant in your mind the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, it's really difficult. You know, you may think it's easy. At least maybe for you it's easy. But it's really difficult, really, just to focus the mind without the chanting, without the external chanting. So if you do that, you know, if you just try, you know, one round or something, just to do that. You know, I did that on the plane the other day. And it really will help you focus more when you're chanting out loud. Because it really helps you understand how important it is to focus the mind while you're chanting. Because sometimes we just chant, and then at the same time, the mind, we just let the mind go anywhere, but the, you know, just put the body on automatic, like automatic pilot. Like a plane, you know, like I gave that example probably several months ago, how these pilots put their plane on automatic pilot one time. And they were having a discussion and they overshot the airport by several hundred miles. You know, they were trying to, traffic control was trying to reach them, you know. Hello, where are you? It was almost like that TV show during the 1960s, Car 54, Where Are You? I don't know if anyone ever saw that. No one's ever seen that. Anyway, it's before your time. So it was like two policemen who just spaced out. And they were radioing them, where are you, where are you? And they, you know, they were just like hundreds of miles away where they should be. So this plane was on automatic pilot. And of course the pilots, I think, got fired after that time. Because they were just playing with their iPads or having some discussion about something on the airplane. So in the same way we chant japa, you know, we put our body on automatic pilot and our mind either goes to sleep or thinks about things more important, like eating what we're going to cook today or how much money we owe or how much money we want. And so what I found is if you actually sometimes you do that, you know, you just chant, just close your mouth, don't move your lips or tongue or anything, just think of the holy names, you know, for one round, it's an exercise that helps you chant better at other times. I don't know if anyone's ever tried that. It's really interesting. So anyway, apart from that, because that wasn't the topic of the class, so Haridas Thakur was the one who was offered the Shraddha Patra, the Shraddha play. Patra actually means leaf, which is interesting. Brahmaputra. So, because in the old days, plates were not stainless steel or copper or anything like that. They were just leaf plates, which is actually quite clean. When I was originally in Tirupati, when the devotees would bring me something to offer to Giriraj, they'd always bring it on a banana leaf, a big banana leaf. And it's actually the best type of ecological plate you can get, is a leaf plate. Nowadays, of course, they take the leaf plates, and they put plastic in between two layers of leaf plates, and it's just completely useless. You know, they're making believe it's ecological, but it's actually very bad for the environment. So Haridas Thakur was offered this plate, which is right described here. After the brahmanas do a sacrifice or someone does a sacrifice, the brahmanas are offered the food. So Haridas Thakur, of course, was not born in a Brahminical family. He wasn't even born in a Hindu family. He was born in a Malecha, Yavana family. That means meat eater, someone who eats meat, someone outside of the Vedic purview. And so Haridas Thakur said to Advaita Acharya, "Why are you doing this?" And Advaita Acharya said, "Because you are a devotee of the Supreme Lord, you're the best of the Brahmins." So that's the point. Aho bhatta swa pachato garyan, yad jivagre vartate namatupyam tapustupus tuhugashashnararya brahmanuchir nama gridantiyate. The statement is that if one is chanting the holy names, how wonderful is, actually I'll give a direct translation of this verse. Aho bhatta swa pachato garyan. Aho means amazing. That ho bhatasva pachato garyan, that even as one is a swapacha, you know, low class person eating pigs or whatever, because we shouldn't eat pigs and chant. But if one vartate namatubhyam, if one has the holy names on his lips, and then it's understood that he's come to the status of Brahmana, because normally coming to the status of Brahmana means tapus Jehovah Shashnarya. Means that one has actually done so many sacrifices in previous lives. I mean, that's how one becomes a brahmana. Like that story in the Mahabharata. You can turn up the...
Yeah, we can barely hear you now.
Yeah, that's all right. I'll yell louder. If you can't hear me, I'll yell a little louder. So like that story in the Mahabharata where Vyasadeva comes across a worm crossing the road. And he asked the worm, "Why are you going so fast across the road?" And the worm says, "There's a cart coming. I don't want to get run over." And Vyasadeva says, "Well, guess what? If you get run over, you'll proceed more quickly to your next life, in which you become, I guess, a better worm." And then, you know, after, you know, 8,400,000 species of life, you're going to work your way up gradually. And, you know, eventually you'll become Vaishya, eventually you become a kshatriya, I'll become your guru when you're a kshatriya. And then you'll become a brahmin. And after that, you go back to Godhead. So it was like, you know, many births, bhavanam janmanamante. And so the worm said, "Hari bol," and he stayed in the middle of the road, and he allowed himself to be squished by the cart, because he really understood the gradual process of working his way up. So That's the point. That's the normal procedure to become a brahmana, is you just work your way up life after life after life. But the point of this particular verse that I just quoted was aho bhatta swa pachato garyan, that if one is chanting, it's assumed automatically he's gotten the benefit of performing all the austerities and all the sacrifices and all the penances that would be required for someone to work their way up and become a brahmana in any case. And then he's on Brahmanuchar Nama Grananthiyate, that he's automatically considered to be a Brahmana. Of course, it's not that just one chants Hare Krishna and then stops chanting. You have to keep chanting. Because in this age of Kali, as soon as you stop chanting, it's something like the little boy who is plugging up the dike. In Amsterdam, little Dutch boy. That's Amsterdam. Amsterdam is a Dutch place where people used to wear wood shoes, you know, and dance funny. So you know, they clip them with shoes. So this, you know, the story, a typical story is that because Amsterdam is under sea level, just like New Orleans, but they're more intelligent than New Orleans because they made a dike around the whole area. I don't know if anyone here, I guess some of you have actually flown into Amsterdam and you see all the, of course they're most famous for tulips. You understand, in the spring, there's all these tulips that come out in Amsterdam, they have all these greenhouses. Anyone seen that when they fly over Amsterdam? I have, because I used to fly into Amsterdam all the time. So it's below sea level, so there's a story of this little boy, you know, he had to keep his finger in the dike. As soon as he would, a dike means like a dam, for those of you who don't know. It's not like a particular lady who acts like a man. That's a dike. Anyway, so he kept his finger there because as soon as he took his finger out, the water would rush in, and not just the stream would rush in, but it would wash away the stones so the rest of the dike would collapse. You know, water is like that. Once it starts coming through, it's actually very corrosive. It can actually wash things away. So in the same way, one has to always be chanting and be alert because we're actually below sea level in Kali Yuga. It's an interesting metaphor, isn't it? We're below sea level, and there's also New Orleans, like they had to keep the pumps going, and as soon as the electricity went off and the pumps weren't able to go. New Orleans is a bowl, and the bowl, when it fills with water, the water doesn't pour out naturally. So when we fill with the Kali Yuga tendencies, it doesn't come out naturally. We have to always keep pumping. We always have to keep chanting. Anyway, so Haridas Thakur, of course, he always kept pumping or chanting. He was chanting 300,000 names of Krishna a day. You know, that's called 3 lakhs, for those of you who come from India. And that means 64 times 3. And that's an amazing amount of rounds to chant. I mean, you know, I'm happy if I can chant 64 rounds on Kalasi. And you know, if I'm too tired, I'm not able to do that. Or if it's a Sunday feast, I'm not able to do that. Actually, there's one devotee in New Zealand who chants 64 rounds every day. And he works a job. He wakes up at 1 o'clock every morning and works a job. He's in charge of some sort of internet company, cable TV or something like that. He works a job and he has 2 children. Pretty interesting, isn't it? How he does that. You know, I asked him, how do you wake up at 1 o'clock in the morning? He says, well, just go to sleep early. Come home from work, go to sleep. And on the weekend, he does full-time deity worship in the temple. He wakes the deities up, dresses the deity, Radha Krishna deities we're talking about. And then his name is Jagannath Sutta. And I'm just amazed when I visit him because, you know, I can't even do one-tenth of what he's doing. You know, he's maintaining family and everything simultaneously. So it's a question of time management. That's really interesting. It's not, you know, basically he sleeps almost the same amount that we all do, but he just manages his time, you know, with focus on the holy names. The holy names, chanting the holy names is the most important thing. So with any of us, we always have, you know, time is wasted. You know, I was just thinking if I could ever somehow or other turn off my computer and turn off the phone, I'd have so much I could probably chant, like at least 2 lakhs of rounds a day, you know, 64 times 2. But, you know, there's the computer, and then we're getting irradiated by all this wonderful radiation from the computer, isn't it? We've been studying about that lately on the computer. Anyway, it's kind of interesting. You're studying on the computer is how, why the computer is dangerous for your health. So, but there's actually time. There's actually time to chant 64 rounds. It's just we haven't managed our time properly. You know, if we really wanted to, we could chant 64 rounds every day. We had a taste for chanting. So Haridas Thakur, so he got this Shatapatra, the Shata leaf, Shata plate, and because he was considered the best of the Brahmanas, even though he was born in a Muslim family, which is kind of a low-class family, wasn't even allowed in the temple of Lord Jagannath. And then on the other hand, you know, so there's someone who wasn't born in Brahmin family who is considered the topmost Brahmin. On the other hand, we have people who were born in Brahmin families and they weren't considered Brahmins. I mean, you have the example of Ashwatthama, for example. Ashwatthama was born from Dronacharya's family. And he was considered Brahma Bandhu, and he was so out of control of his senses, he tried to kill Parikshit in the womb, tried to kill all the Pandavas with the Brahmastra. Completely unqualified personality. Another one, of course, was Sringi, the one who cursed Parikshit Maharaj. You know, Parikshit Maharaj went and garlanded his father with a snake, dead snake. And, of course, this is all past time. And then he cursed Sringi when he saw his father like that. He cursed Parikshit Maharaj, who died in 7 days by the bite of the snake bird. So anyway, so you have examples of people who are qualified, people who are not qualified to be Brahmins. And Brahmana is, not only is it not a matter of caste, but it's also not a matter of initiation. You know, because sometimes people think, you know, I got Brahminical initiation. Prabhupada said that, he would often say that the thread is a two-pice thread. Pice is like one-tenth. Pice is one-hundredth of a rupee. You know, a rupee right now is approximately 2 cents American. And so you can imagine 1/100th of 2 cents. That's pretty interesting, isn't it? 1/100th of 2 cents. You know, you can't even... Nowadays, you know, they're thinking of getting rid of the penny in America. And, you know, what to speak of 1/100th of 2 cents. I mean, you can't even think of how little that is. And they still have pice in India, like half a rupee or something like that, but not really one pice or two pice anymore. So, yeah. Anyway, so the point I'm making is that one has to be a Brahmin by quality, and we should not simply be satisfied with our, you know, we've taken second initiation, or we have a spiritual master, or whatever like that. We have to cultivate these qualities by continually chanting Hare Krishna. That's actually the point I was making. And then when we do that, and also cultivate the qualities in the mode of goodness, you know, being equal poised, or equipoised, depending on how you pronounce it. And all these other things, you know, not eating too much, not eating too little, controlling your anger, vacho vegam. I mean, these are all important things. Not that you simply chant Hare Krishna, but to help you chant Hare Krishna, these other things have to be done. Vacho vegam, manasakrota vegam, jiva vegam, mudra vegam, pashta vegam. Why else would Srila Rupa Goswami mention these things in the Upadeshamrita? So then, if one comes to the standard or platform of Brahman, then they become qualified to worship Brahman, which is the deity, which is really interesting. Prabhupada said you have to be Brahman to approach Brahman. That means one has to be situated like that to properly worship the Supreme Personality of God. Anyway, so these are some of the points. Any questions or comments? Yes.
There's a comment, but there's a question that I've been wondering for a long time. The comment is that when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was on the planet, he was having fast time with all his associates. He said, I'm not going to take a prasadam unless one of the 100,000 humans. And he said, and the devotees were saying 100,000 were all poor. But he was speaking about chanting 60,000.
Yeah.
So then they all did. But the question I had is that the devotees were asking me that when I was in India, and it's like, one devotee said that because of Vasudev Datta asking for on the liberation of all living entities, then at the time of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, whoever was there, they all got liberated or back to Godhead or what?
They all got liberated.
Liberated, but not back to God.
Not back to God. Someone has to want to go back to God. You know, another point about Lord Chaitanya taking prasadam, it's interesting now that you mention that. He would only take prasadam in Brahmins' houses, in traditional Brahmins' houses, which is really interesting. Because even though Lord Chaitanya accepted that anybody who was chanting, you know, a devotee was actually automatically a Brahmin. He actually respected the culture. This is actually, it's an actually interesting point that I forgot to mention in class, and I'm happy you sort of brought it up, you know, implicitly, is that Lord Chaitanya did not want to disturb the culture. So this is also interesting as far as us, you know, preaching Krishna consciousness. Like Lord Chaitanya didn't push that Haridas Thakur, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami could go into the temple of Lord Jagannath because he didn't want to disturb the culture. Because really when you start disturbing a particular culture, you know, people criticize you or disrespect you, and you really can't give them the message that you're trying to give. Like Lord Chaitanya took sannyas, not because he had to take sannyas. I mean, there's an esoteric reason too. But exoterically, he took sannyas so people would respect him, which is part of the culture. So he worked within the cultural dynamics to preach Krishna consciousness, which is important for us too, to understand that we don't want to be so like out of touch with the culture. I mean, we can be out of touch with the culture, but we don't want to be seen as out of touch with the culture. We don't want to be seen as weird. I mean, like I remember sometimes devotees would go out different colored socks, and you know, and even in Rath Yatra, you know, there were people in Rath Yatra that were going out with bare feet, you know. I know you're supposed to go to Rath Yatra with bare feet and everything like that, but what's the culture? Even when I go to Govardhan, I mean, I would prefer to go around Govardhan with my sneakers, but to respect the culture there so people won't criticize, then what do? You know, I have socks. I put on socks. You know, I can't do barefoot, you know, for one reason or other. You know, wear Western feet. Western feet is interesting. So you have to understand what culture you're dealing with, and you don't want to agitate people. Like, we don't want to disturb the minds of, that's also in Bhagavad Gita. We don't want to disturb the minds of those who are materially attached. We just encourage them to work in a spirit of devotion. You understand? So it's really interesting as far as our own preaching is concerned. You know, sometimes we think that some devotees may think, you know, we want to make everybody like Indian culture. But that will just disturb everybody's mind. Not everybody, no, but a lot of people's minds. What we want to do is present them with the science of Krishna consciousness. And whatever the culture is in America, of course not the stuff like barbecues, obviously. But whatever the culture is in America, you know, you shake hands. You know, I shake hands with people. Even though, you know, it's not a traditional Indian culture. Traditionally, I guess in India you go namaste, you know, like this, with people. But you can shake hands. Or whatever the cultural thing is, so that you don't disturb people's minds. So Lord Chaitanya did that, even though he understood that, you know, Haridas Thakur were pure devotees, they were automatically Brahmins. I remember there was a story when Lord Chaitanya was in Benares, and then he was with Chandrasekhar and Tapan Mishra. So Tapan Mishra was not a Brahmin, but Chandrasekhar was. So he would actually only eat food at Chandrasekhar's house. And when a non-Brahmin wanted to serve Lord Chaitanya, he wouldn't be able to cook. He had to buy it from Lord Jagannath, the prasadam, and give it to Lord Jagannath. Although there was nothing wrong with him cooking, Lord Chaitanya respected the culture. Interesting, isn't it? So we don't want to disturb people's minds, but encourage them to work in a spirit of devotion. Thank you for bringing that up, I mean, indirectly. All glories to the Prabhupada, Shri Shri Radha Bhakti Nanda Ki Jai.